1420 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Lawmakers are reacting to what former President Trump posted on his Truth Social platform yesterday. He speculated he'll be arrested on Tuesday and is calling on his supporters to protest. Here's CBS's Michael George.
In a tweet, Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called the potential indictment an outrageous abuse of power by a radical DA. He said he's directing relevant committees to investigate if federal funds are being used to, quote, subvert our democracy by interfering in elections with politically motivated prosecutions. In a statement, former Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, "The grand jury's consideration of this case makes clear no one is above the law, not even a former president of the United States."
It's crunch time for a big Swiss bank, which needs a major lifeline to stay afloat. Our Peter King with details.
The Swiss government is reportedly pressing UBS Bank to take over Credit Suisse, a longtime rival with a $6 billion cash infusion. Analyst Bert Ely.
Credit Suisse has had issues unique to it for several years now, so one should not be surprised that these problems are coming to a head.
Credit Suisse is the biggest name among the recent failures, a devastating fall for an institution established 167 years ago.
Wyoming is the first state in the nation to ban abortion pills. Ingrid Duran with National Right to Life.
So I'm feeling really positive about everything that Wyoming did with the law that protects unborn children and also the law that prohibits chemical abortions.
The state also just raised penalties for doctors and healthcare providers for performing abortions. Those range from 5 years in prison to $20,000 in fines. Over a week ago, thousands of residents in Monterey County, California, had to be evacuated because of persistent heavy rains that flooded the area, causing a levee to break. Glenn Church, as the county district supervisor, says there are $400 million on the table to get that levee fixed.
Monterey County's not just committed here to making this community whole again, but, you know, to making it better.
The area is known for its strawberry fields. Hundreds of acres were flooded. It's unclear if the crop will survive. They're cleaning up in southern Ecuador and northern Peru today. After a 6.8 magnitude earthquake yesterday, at least 16 people were killed. And eggs have been so expensive in recent months that Dollar Tree has stopped selling them altogether. A spokesperson said they just can't afford it right now and don't anticipate bringing eggs back into their stores until the fall. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Moments like hearing my cat purr good morning mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib. Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR positive HER2 negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, It's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly sunny today with highs around 38. Winds out of the west 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, lows level off around 23. Mainly cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, highs around 42. Upper 30s Tuesday with a chance for mixed precipitation. Turning much warmer Wednesday with highs in the upper 40s and showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 15.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
Welcome to the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuono. I'm filling in for regular host Mark Thompson. We have a good show lined up tonight with special guest Sarah Geenan. She's going to be joining us midway through the show or maybe a little bit before then. Sarah is a candidate for the Wisconsin Court of Appeals 1st Judicial District. We'll have more from Sarah and about that race as she joins us from another campaign appearance shortly. So in preparation for that, let's talk about what's on the ballot in April, because we have a spring election this April. Election day is Tuesday, April 4th. And the race or election that has been garnering everyone's attention, at least for those paying attention to spring elections in Wisconsin, is the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. As our listeners know, we had a primary in February where the race was winnowed down from four candidates, two conservative candidates and two progressive or liberal candidates, down to two candidates, one from each side of the ideological fence, if you will. And so the two candidates in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election upcoming are Janet Protasiewicz, who is a judge from Milwaukee County and who is the progressive or liberal ideological candidate. And Dan Kelly, who was formerly a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice and rejected by the voters of Wisconsin in favor of Jill Karofsky, who is now a justice on the Supreme Court and a progressive. The race, it couldn't be more important in terms of the balance of the Supreme Court. Everything is in play in this sense. There are seven Wisconsin Supreme Court justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Currently, as has been for many years, there is a conservative ideological bend to the Supreme Court, meaning that the ideologically conservative side has a majority of those justices. Right now, the alignment is four conservative justices and three liberal justices, and it's been that way for years. So when people who are advocates in this race say the balance is at stake, or democracy is on the ballot, or all of the issues that you care about are on the ballot, in terms of a potential shift ideologically of the Supreme Court, they're right on both sides. Conservatives are telling their followers that. Progressives are telling their followers that. And so it couldn't be more direct in terms of outcome. Be assured that if former Justice Dan Kelly wins and returns to his former seat on the Supreme Court, he will align right away with the ideologically conservative side of that court. That is to replace Justice Patience Rogensack, who is not running for re-election. She was a conservative, is a conservative, and so Justice Kelly would slide into that chair. If Judge Protasiewicz wins, then she would align with the progressive side of the Supreme Court and decide issues differently, certainly than Justice Kelly, and likely her and other progressive judges will have a majority for the first time in many years. So we will see a readdressing and reapproachment of the issues that come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court in a much different way. So let's talk about what some of those issues are. First of all, this is, again, Craig Mastantuono. We are on 540 AM, 101.1 FM, the Shaw, Waukesha, hometown radio. And this is the Paul Revere Show. Craig Mastantuono filling in for regular Paul Revere Show host Mark Thompson. Issues that are before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Some things for voters and listeners to remember. This is a court of discretionary review, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So if those of you were listening to the prior show, you heard an interview with Judge Janet Protasiewicz, with the prior host, where she was explaining how the Court of Appeals takes all appeals. They're required to take all appeals. They are an error-correcting court. We'll hear more about that from Attorney Geenan, who is joining us shortly. And if a party is dissatisfied on either the criminal or the civil side of cases with the outcome before the Court of Appeals, they have the opportunity to apply or petition the Wisconsin Supreme Court for review. They can file a petition, and the Supreme Court has discretionary review, meaning that it takes a minimum amount of justices to vote to take that case for under consideration at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, like all state Supreme Courts and the United States Supreme Court, turns down the vast majority of the cases that are applied for review before that tribunal. And the cases that are taken up, the court generally concentrates on either issues of first impression that need legal clarification before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, or issues that need further guidance from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And those cases are then argued before the court. The justices and their clerks do the research, read the briefing of the parties, and then issue decisions. It's important to remember a little bit, I think, for our listeners on how the court actually works and then how it's manipulated, because interest groups, advocacy groups, and parties have an interest in shaping the law through the Wisconsin Supreme Court and other state courts and the United States Supreme Court, through their opinions. You know, the way the law works is that the legislature passes laws in a state, but they are interpreted and reviewed for constitutionality by courts of appeal and the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And so within that, you know, cases sometimes happen to come before the court. There's a case or controversy either in criminal law or civil law that starts out at the trial level, gets reviewed at the Court of Appeals level, and then a party petitions for review to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But there are other times when advocacy groups on both sides of the ideological spectrum intentionally seek out and petition cases, take on cases, eventually hoping to get before the Supreme Court. You know, I spoke recently, had the opportunity to speak at Turner Hall in Milwaukee before a panel, or with a panel, I'm sorry, before their members and online audience with other guests. And we were educating their guests about advocacy and issue advocacy before the court. And so a couple of myths that are often put out there that I'd like to discuss with you before Sarah Geenan comes to join us are as follows. You know, you often hear from the conservative side, conservative candidates, conservative politicians, that they are going to decide the law as it's written, not as they would like it to be, and that the other side, and they label progressives this way, are judicial activists who don't want to follow the law. Actually, anything couldn't be further from the truth. Let's just talk about that. First of all, courts of review, both the Court of Appeals and a state Supreme Court, are supposed to and are entirely within their lane interpreting the law to determine constitutionality or to determine legislative intent of that law. And there's a whole body of interpretive requirements that are handed down by precedent, prior decisions of those courts, that instruct courts of review how to interpret legislative intent, interpret a law, and check it for constitutionality. There is always a presumption that the plain language of the statute is the first review. If a statute says something, it means something. And if it's not subject to various interpretations, the plain language of a statute is how a court is supposed to interpret a law. But there are challenges to whether laws, even if they are plain language and easily interpreted, whether those laws run afoul of either a state constitutional privilege or a federal constitutional privilege. And that's why we have Supreme Courts. That's why we have courts of appeal, so that litigants can say, you know, the legislature may have passed this law, but it violates my privilege. And activism, if you will, in terms of litigating and challenging laws, goes on both sides of the ideological spectrum, and courts of review appropriately determine how laws either run afoul of, or rule that laws run afoul of, or do not run afoul of constitutional privilege. We're coming up on a 3-minute break, and we'll take that remaining time to just give you an example of that. So first of all, we've heard a lot in recent years about Second Amendment rights. This is a darling cause of the right. Conservatives have been pushing the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution to be interpreted as an absolute right to bear arms, an individual right. And they got their way recently, in recent years, with a decision called the Heller case. That's H-E-L-L-E-R. That was out of Washington, D.C. And the Heller case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And ultimately, the decision stood for the premise, changing prior precedent, the premise that the Second Amendment is an individual right, that it didn't relate to militias and state militias arming themselves and having that right under the Constitution to bear arms in the context of the American Revolutionary conflict, but rather that this was an individual federal constitutional right or privilege that was endowed to everyone in the United States. And that was a break from precedent, as I said. Well, Heller came about because Heller himself, as part of issue advocacy related to the Second Amendment, challenged a Washington, D.C. law that put restrictions on firearm possession within that municipality. And so Heller challenged that law as it was written by the Washington, D.C. legislature or council, and said this runs afoul of my constitutional privilege. And all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Court determined, yes, you're right. We agree with you. This is actually an individual right, and these restrictions on your individual right to bear arms is violated by this law. Washington, D.C. law is no good. It is constitutionally invalid, hence the Heller decision. That was a court writing the law or rewriting the law as it wanted it to be, rather than as it was written by the Washington, D.C. Council. Perfect example of conservative judicial activism on the right producing a result that was wanted by the right, pursued, sought and pursued, and achieved by the right. So when you hear, well, we're going to apply the law as written, that wasn't what was done in the Heller case, right? The right just doesn't complain about that because they won in that instance. When they label those on the left as being activists wanting to write or rewrite laws pursuant to constitutional privilege, it's as if they're saying the game is good for us, but not for you. Don't let them fool you. This is just an example of one of the issues or how issues come before courts of review. More on the other side.
What's that smell? You smell that? I hear that same thing every day. I'm Crust Buster Crockett, and I can tell you, I sure do smell that. That there's the sweet smell of cherry pie. That's the only thing you smell when Crockett septic pumper trucks come a-rolling down the road to pump your septic and holding tanks. Ooh! me. They sure do a good job keeping your system clean. And Crockett Septic can also take care of your porta potty rentals too. Just give them a call. 715-712-3456. Tell them Crustbuster Crockett sent you.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pumped right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their bumper trucks smell just like cherry pie.
Better days are coming. It's called Saturday and Sunday at Jammer's Bar and Grill. On the weekend, kick back with the Jammer's 5 Beer Bucket Special. Any domestic beer you want, mix and match, $10. Jammer's is the best in burgers, sandwiches, and apps. Don't forget Jammer's is the spot for fun, and they have plenty of room for your next party. That's Jammer's Bar and Grill, 2810 Eagle Road, Wisconsin Rapids.
It's the only forum both Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates will take part in, and you can hear it Tuesday, March 21st at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell will anchor our special coverage as Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly debate some of the biggest issues facing the court, from redistricting to abortion access.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates debate Tuesday, March 21st, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Paul Revere Show continuing. Craig Mastantuono filling in for regular host Mark Thompson. We were talking before the break on how so-called judicial activism works and how that label is misapplied by the right to the left and under some pretend scheme that they don't, litigate actively before courts of review all across the country to push a conservative agenda, which of course they do. We used the Heller case and the statute in Washington, D.C., that was a reasonable regulation on firearm possession within that municipality that was ultimately struck down by the United States Supreme Court. A hero of the right, Antonin Scalia, writing the majority opinion for the Supreme Court and striking down firearm restrictions in Washington, D.C., applying the law as the conservatives would like it rather than how it was written, which is one of their favorite taglines. It's a Federalist Society special. To quote that line, I'm going to apply the law as written, not as I'd like it to be, unless the law isn't as I'd like it to be, in which case we're going to apply the law as our conservative majority justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and other courts will do for us. So don't be fooled by that label. A classic example of if what you want to call it is activism, I just call it litigation or constitutional litigation on the progressive side, was Brown versus Board of Education, where a law said that separate but equal was equal. And litigator Thurgood Marshall pursued that on behalf of his organization and litigated that all the way to the United States Supreme Court before he began his own career as a Supreme Court justice, challenging the constitutional premise of separate but equal laws in education and other settings, and ultimately resulting in the seminal decision of Brown versus Board of Education, where that law was struck down and other laws were struck down as a result across the United States, resulting in integration racially of our public schools. This is a classic case of litigation before Supreme Courts that result in interpretation of laws and challenges to laws that are ultimately struck down by courts of review for violating constitutional privilege. So this goes on. And so you shouldn't be fooled by one side pretending we only apply the law as it's written and the other side cheats. That's really not the way this works. Courts are within their lane to look at challenges to laws that are passed by legislatures. It is part of our system of checks and balances. And that is something that goes on and should go on within the system of government envisioned by the founders and by the state constitutions across our country. You enjoy those protections from Supreme Courts and courts of review across the country when you reside in one of the states or in the United States. And so we really have kind of attacked our system of government in our politics these days by engaging this premise that courts are only there to somehow just read and then repeat laws that are passed by constitutions. So no side either owns or disavows what we think of as judicial activism, what I call litigation before courts of review and Supreme Courts. So I'm going to introduce our guest before we head into our next break, who's just arrived from hot off the campaign trail, I believe, and continuing on the campaign trail. We're joined here by Sarah Geenan. Sarah is an attorney in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a plaintiff's employment injury and compensation attorney. I'll let her talk about her practice, but Sarah, welcome to the Paul Revere Show.
Thanks for having me, Craig. I appreciate it.
You bet. So where are you coming from?
Well, I was just at a meet and greet where I was able to spend a couple hours telling people about why I'm running for Court of Appeals, about why it's important, why this race is important too.
So how many versions of your here's who I am and here's why I'm running for the Court of Appeals have you gotten down to, small, medium, and long? Or
I attended an event on Sunday evening. It was my third of the day. The folks at that event had been sitting there for 2 hours. So I've got a 90-second version, a slightly longer version, and then, the full spiel.
Well, our producer, Anastasia, just held up three fingers, which means we got 3 minutes to the break. So let's try
the middle 90, version.
Yeah, let's try the 90-second version to introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll come back on the other side.
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, I am an attorney at the Prevent Law Firm. I'm a partner there. I do labor and employment work. So I represent labor unions and workers who are trying to vindicate their rights, trying to enforce their rights in the workplace, whether that's for a workplace free of discrimination, getting paid what they're owed, their wages. And sometimes they do a little bit of bankruptcy work, trying to get employees paid when their company goes under, or trying to resolve issues so the company can stay in business. But I got into this because I grew up in a blue-collar family where my dad was active in his union. So I spent time in union halls, and I watched workers join together, work together to have their voice heard, to make a difference in the workplace. And that really made a impact on me. I saw that this was not only workplace democracy, but real democracy, people's ability to get involved, to have a say. And we've seen over the course of my career, it's been harder and harder for regular people to be heard, to have that voice. So rather than allow the corporate interests to continue to creep into courts, I threw my hat in the ring. And I think that this is a really important race with some really important implications as well.
You know, I often get questions from friends of mine who aren't attorneys on my block. I'm sure you get the same kind of questions. Who should I vote for this judicial race? And a lot of my friends or colleagues say, like, who's the conservative and who's the progressive? And that's what they really want to know. Who are you?
Well, I am the candidate who's been endorsed by Planned Parenthood, by Voces de la Frontera, by Fair Wisconsin. I'm a candidate who believes in our civil rights, believes that our civil rights need to be protected and enforced. And that's me.
All right. Sounds like you're signaling that you are a progressive. I'm going to take that liberty and accuse you of that. You don't have to reply. You are running against, and we got about 20 seconds. Tell us who you're running against.
Absolutely.
Real quick.
I am running against a judge who was appointed by Scott Walker. And he's been there on the bench, and he has aligned himself with the far-right activists, Bradley Foundation, and things like that. So it's me versus him, I suppose.
Okay, that seems to square up the race as kind of a classic conservative versus progressive. Joined here by Sarah Geenan, candidate for Wisconsin Court of Appeals. We'll catch you on the after the break and continue the discussion.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Badgers men's basketball team is in postseason play, and you can hear the action from the National Invitational Tournament on these local Civic Media radio stations.
Wisconsin hosts Liberty in the second round of the NIT this Sunday with an 11 a.m. tip-off.
WFHR, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids is our flagship station. In Richland Center, dial up WRCE, 1450 AM or 107.7 FM. And in Amory, tune in 1260 AM, WLAK. Every win in the NIT, find the Badgers on these local Civic Media radio stations and on the app.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes. I even got shot. But I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's Yap advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly sunny today with highs around 38. Winds out of the west 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, lows level off around 23. Mainly cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, highs around 42. Upper 30s Tuesday with a chance for mixed precipitation. Turning much warmer Wednesday with highs in the upper 40s and showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 15.
The Paul Revere Show continues. Craig Mastantuono filling in for regular host Mark Thompson on 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw. So we are joined by guest Sarah Geenan. We're talking about judicial politics. And Sarah, you said you were listening when you were heading in for the first part of the show where I was talking about kind of the lay of the land this spring in terms of the big race, if you will, statewide on the ballot, which is the Wisconsin Supreme Court seat that is an open seat. Justice Patience Rogensack formerly held that seat. And the election will tip the scale for the conservative or progressive side of our Wisconsin Supreme Court. We're both lawyers. We're tuned in with that issue. But I am surprised at how often people ask right up till April 4th, okay, tell me about this again. Who's Kelly? Who's Protasiewicz? Who's conservative? Who's liberal? Do you get questions like that a lot?
I get those questions all the time. Since the court's races are technically nonpartisan, you know, people aren't going to see a D or an R after people's names. So they don't know. They want to know where candidates stand. I think they want to have an idea of how the perspective a candidate brings to the bench so they can understand, you know, what the candidate might think about these certain issues that are likely to come before the court. And I get that question all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, too. And it's amazing to me where I think, oh, my gosh, you know, we've known this for months. And I shouldn't be that way because, frankly, it's a spring election. It's a nonpartisan race. You're right. People don't get those regular signals. And so they are confused sometimes. And they want to vote their values, right? They want to vote. Most people, especially in a battleground state like Wisconsin and the elections that we've had in the last 10 to 15 years, kind of are on one side or the other of things. And they want to vote those values and they want to know who the candidates are that stand for the values that they believe are in our best interests, right? One side or the other.
Absolutely. I think a person's values, their life experiences, the values they hold affect how they see the world and how they see and how the law, how they see. I think that gives you a greater understanding of how the law applies in the circumstances and the consequences.
So your election, Milwaukee County, which is basically the first judicial district. So the Court of Appeals seat that you're running for handles all of the appeals from Milwaukee County alone. And that's different than the other judicial districts that handle several counties at once because of Milwaukee's size, right?
That's correct.
And so you're on the same election cycle. You'll be on the ballot on April 4th for people voting in Milwaukee County, correct?
Right. The first judicial district is all of Milwaukee County. There are four districts, but Milwaukee County is its own.
So people, when they go to the polls to decide between Dan Kelly or Janet Protasiewicz for Wisconsin Supreme Court, if they live in Milwaukee County, your race is going to be on that ballot.
If they live in Milwaukee County, they're going to see Sarah Geenan on their ballot.
All right. And so let's talk about that framework. I want to spend a little more time up to the break and then in the next segment talking more particularly about your background again. But that framework is people want to vote their values. They're going to check the box. If they are checking the box for just Judge Janet Protasiewicz, who are they likely, if they're voting their values, to vote for in your election?
If they're voting their values, they're going to vote for me. I think Judge Janet and I align on just about, we bring the same perspective and we have the same values. I think our values aren't just our values either. I think it's important to note that. It's not that these are our values or anything we're trying to impose. This is what I believe. And I think I share those values of most Milwaukee County.
So we made reference to, and I want to talk a little more particularly about issues that could come up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, some of the big, big things that are at stake in our state, because I don't think it's understatement. You know, I'm one of those progressives that kind of rolls their eyes at my progressive friends in the bubble that say things like democracy is on the ballot or our country is at stake. But with this race, I don't think you can really overstate the importance of the direction our state may take one way or the other with a Supreme Court that is, you know, on a progressive side or conservative side. So let's talk about maps, first of all. Maps do appear to be on the ballot in this Supreme Court election, do they not?
They absolutely do. They absolutely do. For those who may not know, there was a significant change to the legislative maps in 2010, and again as a result of the 2020 census. And I think there's a real issue. I think it is on the ballot.
So those changes have resulted in the gerrymandered state that we are in. And I mean state with a small s condition that we're in, right? Because we're in a battleground state. We're a 50-50 voting electorate, but our legislature is like 65% Republican, right? You know, we have the Republicans hold extreme majorities because of the changes that they controlled in 2010 with a Republican legislature and a Scott Walker governor to put in basically rules that allowed them to cheat.
I think that's, I'm not going to say cheat, but I'm going to say that the maps are gerrymandered. There's no question about it. The maps changed dramatically in 2010 and allowed this kind of agenda to, allowed a series of legislative changes to be made that have affected our ability to have our votes counted for what they're worth equally.
So, leading into this segment, Chuck D and Public Enemy, we're talking about fighting the power, and it seems like there's litigation that will likely go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court to fight the powers that be in terms of beneficial to the Republican side of things through gerrymandered maps. That is on the ballot with this election.
Yes, it is.
The other huge issue that you're hearing a lot about on the advertisements in the Wisconsin, sticking with the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, is women's reproductive rights.
Right. I think most of the listeners probably are aware that Wisconsin has two abortion laws on the books. And right now there's a lawsuit filed by, I think, the attorney general trying to figure out what law applies, if any. And that is, you know, a judicial candidate can't comment on the lawsuit because you certainly have to keep an open mind to consider what the law might be. But it is undoubtedly going to be on the ballot. It is undoubtedly going to be an issue that the courts have to decide in the next couple of years.
Right now, abortion is illegal in Wisconsin as a result of the Dobbs decision and the current law that's on the book in Wisconsin from the 1800s, correct?
Correct. Right now, abortion is illegal as a result of the Dobbs decision.
Okay. Without stating your position, did you regret the change in status in Wisconsin as a result of those decisions?
I think the Dobbs decision is established law, and there was an opinion and a dissent. And I would have, you know, if I were to have to, you know, I would say that I align with the dissent.
With the dissent in Dobbs, which would be a pro-choice oriented dissent.
That's right.
You know, scrolling through the other issues that will come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, if fair legislative maps and a woman's reproductive rights in our state aren't enough, there's a myriad of other issues moving down through civil law, labor and employment decisions, criminal law, Fourth Amendment, unreasonable search and seizure, right to counsel, First Amendment rights as well. And we have kind of an active litigative state in our state, do we not, between groups like Will on the conservative side, Law Forward on the progressive side, you know, constitutional litigators that seem to be fighting it out on issues of importance to people, even though people on the ground might not always be aware of this ongoing litigation or how it's going to affect their lives when these decisions come out.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think we do see litigation on both sides of every issue where the parties are either trying to advance or trying to not advance, depending on your ideological perspective, where litigation goes and what the effect of that litigation might mean for the general public or for the law. The courts are being used to often change the law or to develop the law in accordance with a party's particular ideological beliefs.
You know, I said we wanted to use the next segment to talk a little bit about elective politics. So let me jump into it here before we go to break and talk about just the candidates themselves, because I'm going to share with you my own opinion that I think that the conservatives may not have been well suited by choosing Dan Kelly as their candidate in a year. And we saw this in the gubernatorial election in the fall of 2022. You know, after Dobbs, in a year when women's reproductive rights emerged so forcefully as an issue across the country and in our state, really changed 50 years of the landscape. You know, states like Wisconsin, where access to legal abortion was available, it went away overnight, right?
Overnight.
The clinics closed, Planned Parenthood moved. You know, in states like ours that are close to states where abortion is legal, like Minnesota, remains legal, like Minnesota or Illinois, there, you know, was kind of a redistribution of supply chains, if you will, and access to abortion cross border, where governors like Pritzker in Illinois are saying, look, we're going to protect not only women residents of our state, but from other states that are coming here to seek legal procedures. And so, you know, in the gubernatorial, we saw the Republican side nominate, in my opinion, you know, kind of a candidate in Michaels that, you know, like a kind of scruffy, driving around in a red pickup truck with a flannel on. And I got to admit, at the time, I thought, you know, I don't think this is playing well if, you know, you always hear about suburban women voters, you know, and the women vote overall in the election. It was not surprising to me that, you know, Governor Evers won by a much larger margin than he beat Governor Walker by 4 years previously. Because honestly, I just don't think that Michael's related to women very well or the women vote. And, you know, I shouldn't speak to that. I would ask you to speak to that, and then we'll talk about the coming election. But do you have any views on that?
Well, I'm not going to speak as a judicial candidate on this, but I will speak as a mother of three youngish sons. I think women are becoming more informed and more aware of the issues and the serious effect these issues are going to have on their future and their children's future. So I think I think that they are seriously vetting these candidates more than they may have in the past.
I think you're right. So fast forward to April of 2023, and you know, you have former Justice Kelly, who was already rejected by the voters once in this state in favor of a woman candidate, now Justice Jill Karofsky out of Dane County, and was a prosecutor and Department of Justice attorney, who won fairly handily over former Justice Kelly, or at that time the incumbent Justice Kelly. They put him back out again, a male candidate who doesn't seem like a male candidate of the type that Governor Evers is. Let's just put it that way, who on the campaign trail kind of reaffirms his, you know, support of women's reproductive rights and progressive causes. But again, somebody who has kind of these, if you will, not only conservative views, but kind of this odd textualist bent, you know, throwback to many years prior in terms of a judicial philosophy or a jurisprudential approach. And, you know, I think that I'm one of those people that think the electorate lives up or down to our expectations of them. I think when you educate the voters and you talk about who you are and how you'd like to see things, they understand. They're not as dumb as people take them for. And, you know, it seems like missing in a lot of these election discussions, whether it's judicial politics or more, the legislative or gubernatorial side, is the abortion issue. It seems like, you know, the Republicans and the conservatives really are the dog that caught the bus, and now they don't know what to do with it, and they're not really talking about it on the campaign trail. You're not hearing Justice or former Justice Kelly go out on the campaign trail and say, I'm pro-life, my views are pro-life, you know, I don't support women's reproductive rights.
I think a lot of times you have to read between the lines, but as a voter and as a judicial candidate, I do think that judges should be accountable to the general public. Judicial candidates should tell voters what they mean. I think voters deserve to be educated, because how else can you hold a judge accountable for fairly and properly interpreting the law if you don't know what they're thinking to begin with?
Yeah, and I think this facade, you know, frankly, you know, and it started at the, you know, Senate hearings for United States Supreme Court confirmation hearings and continues in judicial politics. But, you know, I think this facade of, well, you know, we elect these judicial candidates who we have no idea who they are or what they stand for, and they're just going to decide fresh when they get there, and they don't have values that inform their philosophical approach. I just don't think the electorate, believes that. And I think that, there's a line that can be approached but not crossed, where you're telling people who you are, where you come from, who you've represented, and what that means to you.
I think that's absolutely true. I think a judge's job is to fairly fairly administer justice and fairly administer the laws, but that doesn't mean that they don't also believe something.
Right.
You know, I don't know that there's a better way to say it, but, you know, no one goes to the bench a blank slate.
Right. And I assume you won't either. So when we come back at the after the break, I want you to talk about how you've spent your career, who you've represented before our courts, what that means to you. You know, we all choose our careers as attorneys, and oftentimes, you know, our practices reflect our values. So I want to talk about you on the other side and you as an attorney and what that means.
Sounds great.
Power.
Badgers men's basketball team is in postseason play, and you can hear the action from the National Invitational Tournament on these local Civic Media radio stations.
Wisconsin hosts Liberty in the second round of the NIT this Sunday with an 11 a.m. tip-off.
WFHR, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids is our flagship station. In Richland Center, dial up WRCE, 1450 AM or 107.7 FM. And in Amory, tune in 1260 AM, WLAK. Every win in the NIT, find the Badgers on these local Civic Media radio stations and on the app.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article in the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music, and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. Craig Mastantuno filling in for regular host Mark Thompson, AM 540, FM 101.1, The Shaw. And we are joined again by candidate for the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, First Judicial District, Sarah Geenan. Sarah, welcome back and thanks for joining us.
Thanks again.
So we left the last segment talking kind of about electoral lay of the land as it relates to your run for the Wisconsin Court of Appeals in Milwaukee County, essentially the first judicial district. You're going to be on the same ballot as the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, Judge Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly on that ballot. And so people in Milwaukee County will have the opportunity on April 4th to vote for you after voting in that race as well, correct?
That's right.
So election day is April 4th. Early voting actually starts on...
Absentee ballots go out tomorrow.
Is that right? They go out
Absentee ballots go out tomorrow. I think early voting starts in a week.
Yeah, March 21st, I think, is the early voting. And actually, I'm going to have to avail myself of that because I'm on spring break with my wife and daughter during April 24th.
If your child goes to Milwaukee Public Schools on the traditional calendar, spring break overlaps election day. So if you're going to be out of town... get that absentee ballot.
You know, I'm glad we mentioned that because I just realized that today. And a lot of people, they don't think about it until the last minute, right? So get a plan to vote, as they say, if you are an MPS parent, which I am. You are an MPS parent as
I'm an MPS parent. I don't know if any other school districts have the same spring break, but I am an MPS parent and I know that MPS does.
Right. We talked about practicing lawyers, being a criminal defense attorney. I started my practice at the Wisconsin State Public Defender and then went into private practice. You know, my values fed my desire to represent people accused of crime in the criminal justice system and try to do something about some of the inequities that we see there. How did you find your way to your practice?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say my dad told me to. I grew up in a labor household. My dad was active in his union. I think I mentioned before he was an hourly worker at a paper mill. And, you know, I watched unions fight for members' rights, fight to help people be treated fairly on the job, fight to have a voice in the workplace, to offset an imbalance of power and to be heard. So my dad told me I had to be a teacher or a labor lawyer. And I generally listen to my dad. Don't tell him that. But
Might be listening.
But I saw how important it was to families, and it was really about democracy in the workplace, about ensuring that people's values were respected, people were treated fairly. And that is how I got into what I do. You know, I wanted to stand up for working people, not just unions either. I represent workers who have faced discrimination in the workplace, who haven't been paid their fair wages or who haven't been paid properly, and in a number of other ways. But I work at a great firm that does work for injured workers or workers or people who've been injured. So it's really about standing up for and protecting people's rights, protecting people's ability to be heard.
Standing up for the individual workers and clients, not on the employer side of employment law, as we sometimes say.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
And you haven't changed practices. You've enjoyed your focus there.
I have done my job for the last 16 years, and I absolutely love it. I've got a great job. I've got fantastic clients. So I didn't make the decision to run for Court of Appeals lightly. I mean, goodness, I've got three kids I mentioned in school, the two dogs, and a busy husband as well. But this is important to me. This is about protecting our rights, about making sure that the judges on the bench reflect our values. And I'm not convinced they do. So I'm hoping that I go to the bench in the First Judicial District and make that happen.
All right. Let's pick up that conversation, but I'm told we have a caller. Hello, caller.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yes. My name's CJ from Stoughton. As I hear you discuss, what you believe Republicans believe and philosophies and things of sort, I would like to ask a question as far as women's rights, because I have evolved on this subject.
Sure.
And I'm curious, do you believe there should be any restrictions of a woman up to the day before the baby is born? If not, what restrictions do you believe there should be? And I'd like a little specifics, because people sidestep this. They never answer the question. Because if you're running as a candidate, you always claim that Republicans want to take away the rights of women to choose, but you never explain what your restrictions would be. Mine's evolved, and I've changed my opinion on that. But I'd like to know your restrictions.
Sure. And just to clarify, I know you're probably asking that question for my guest. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Now, my guest...
The candidate.
Right. So the candidate has identified her position as agreeing with the dissent in the Dobbs case. And so let me take a stab at explaining what that means. And
I'd like to hear from her what her restrictions are.
I will.
She's the candidate.
I will. And we'll give you that chance. But let me point out something quickly. Dobbs overturned Roe versus Wade, right? So Roe versus Wade and subsequent cases like the Casey decision set out a very, very specific time frame for when abortion access was legal, and a trimester-based system and reasonable restrictions as the trimesters moved forward on abortion was the very specific time-based system that we had. Sarah, would you like to add something to that?
I think that sums it up. I mean, the law is the law, but I believe that the Dobbs decision wrongly, I believe that the constitutional right to abortion was established before Dobbs was the law of the land. And I agree with the dissent in Dobbs.
Okay. Thank you, caller, though. Appreciate the call and appreciate you asking the question. So, Sarah, what is this like for you? What is your, how are you maintaining a practice and getting out and about the county? And how do you, plan to spend the remaining weeks?
Well, I'll say I'm busy.
I
had to cut back on my youth basketball coaching time, took the year off, but that's okay. Last year, one of the eighth grade boys beat me one-on-one, so I'm still still recovering a bit from that. But it's a lot of work, but it's really rewarding to go around and talk to people throughout the county about what the Court of Appeals is, why it matters, and about why we should bring change and shake up the status quo, why it's important to hold judges accountable, and it involves going to a number of events, talking to people in schools or around schools, in their communities, at neighborhood meetings, and just about anywhere I can get a group of people together.
All right. Well, you certainly see yourself as the shake up the status quo candidate. You're running against a longtime incumbent on the Court of Appeals and prior to that on the trial court. And as you pointed out, appointed originally by a Republican governor. I think you see yourself as somebody that more appropriately reflects the values of Milwaukee County.
I think that's absolutely true.
All right. We are coming up on our final 30 seconds. So, Sarah, I want to thank you for joining us on the Paul Revere Show. I'm sure this won't be your last foray onto radio as the campaign season winds down. Remember, folks, April 4th is the election. Early voting is March 21st and after. And, Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mark will be back next time. Thanks for joining us on the Paul Revere Show.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home.